Dennis E. Pleasant. What else you want to know?
Well, first of all, this is Caitlin DeSylvie and Miney Smith interviewing Dennis E. Pleasant. On the 14th of September, 2007, for the Milltown Oral History Project. We are here with Dennis, and if you could just tell us when and where you were born.
I was born in Missoula, July 5th, 1928. Okay. My dad brought my mother in the 1926 Maxwell for me to be born. To the hospital. There was a hospital right across the street from the Methodist Church, where right now is the library. The library used to be a hospital there.
The Carnegie Library, or the new library?
The new library.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was run by two brothers, and then eventually they sold it out to community. And I call that community was there for a while before we built out there.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Are you sure you want it? You can sit the microphone.
I'm going to get my director's chair because I can't stand too long, but...
No.
Well, I can stand a while.
Okay, so your family was living in Milltown at the time?
My parents?
Yeah.
They were in Bonner.
Oh, in Bonner. Okay.
Yeah. I'm a Bonnerite, but I can tell you a lot about Milltown, too.
All right. Well,
good.
We'll take
because I used to go down there to chase the girls. Hope that isn't on.
So you lived your whole life in Bonner?
Yes, I did.
Uh-huh.
Till I moved here.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Pretty much. We after I left the mill, I was a superintendent at Bonner, and then we built a home out by the tour exit, and that's close to Bonner, 2 miles, just so I could get away from the mill.
When was that? When did you build the...
1961.
Okay.
We sold it in 93. When we divorced and separated. We were married 40 years, but that's history. Okay.
So what was the house that you were living in then when you were a little tiny baby, and then how many different Bonner houses did you actually inhabit?
I just lived in the one.
Oh?
Town, and they're tearing it down. It's the one they're tearing down.
Wait, so which house was it?
I think it was 36. It was right in the middle of town, close to the old roundhouse where the streetcar turned around. Mm-hmm. And went back to Missoula.
So is it the one that's on the corner there?
No, it's four down from where now the post office is.
Oh, okay, but not right next to the mill. Or is it the one that's right next to the mill now?
It's close to the mill, but...
It's not on that little street that's opposite the office.
No, that's Silkstock and Road.
Yeah. Oh,
I see.
On
the paper. I told Kim that's what we called it, so he put it in the paper.
Oh, really? Is that what you called it?
Well, they all kind of nicknames.
So who lived on Silkstocking Row then? That was
the officials. Oh,
okay.
My dad was a supervisor, so he lived just a little ways from it, but he still had a town. And we had a bathroom, fortunately.
Oh.
Not too many houses had bathrooms in those days.
And so then you stayed in that house until...
Yeah, I went in the Army, and when I come out, I stayed there until we got married, and I bought a home in town. And then I kept that, and then I became a supervisor. They wanted me to move back to Bonner, so I moved close to the ballpark. When I was supervised and married, I had one child then, and we were about the fourth house from the ballpark. That's still there. And then we decided to build a home, got land, and build a home where we did.
And that, you said, was in the 60s?
Yeah, we were there about 31 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So what had brought your family to Bonner? What was the story of how they ended up there?
The what?
What brought your family to Bonner?
Well, my dad was a supervisor for Weyerhaeuser in Washington, and the general manager from Bonner took the train and went over and talked to him. The lumbering industry was so big and strong in those days, and they had this magazine where different supervisors, and my dad really wasn't looking to move, from where he was, but they made him a good offer, so... And my mother was raised over there because she was in the Polish community. She came from Poland and all her family and that, so she decided that, it'd be okay. She didn't want to move, but they did anyhow, so...
What year was that?
1922. Mm-hmm. And she showed me it isn't there anymore. They tore it down where the fire department is, right down you know, right off of the Broadway Market, that old Broadway Market, still there, that old house, that was still there, but they lived just behind that in a house, and when they first came, because there wasn't any houses available in Bonner, as soon as one became available, then they, and I wasn't born yet, so I wasn't born until 28.
So were those houses in Bonner reserved for the people who were supervising or sort of higher up at the
mill? Yeah, most of them, and, or some of them if you had a, you know, maintenance job or something where they were close. And most of the people walked, well, in fact, they just about all did, walked to work. And that's when Milltown was going and West Riverside. They'd walk from West Riverside, and they had a bridge to cross the river so they could get right to the mill. And, yeah, it was interesting. Yeah, not too many people drove in those days. Yeah.
So did you... when did you start working at the mill?
When I was 18, 1946.
So that was your first job?
No, I worked on the railroad during World War II because they couldn't get help, so they started taking high school kids, minors, you know. I started there when I was about 16. They lowered the age limit, and my dad had to sign a release that it was okay for me to work and so on. And as soon as I turned 18, I went to work at the Bonner Mill.
And what was your first job there?
Oh, I was working in a planer, and then I bounced all over, you know, that's what you do. And then I went to the green chain. I worked on that for quite a while. That was interesting.
Can you explain what the green chain is for the tape?
Yeah, that's
the
where
tape?
Where they saw the lumber. It comes right out of the sawmill. If it's sawed into a tube before, it's green, you know. It hadn't gone to the kiln yet. In those days, they did a lot of air drying because they didn't have enough kilns. So they didn't have too many kilns. A lot of it sawed into a tube before, or tube of six, whatever the width was. And then you sorted it there. And then it went out to the lumber yard, and they'd stack it up and let it air dry.
So the sorting was the
right
green
there.
Chain?
Yeah, sorting was on the green chain.
Yeah. Okay.
So then how did you work?
In the old days, excuse me for interrupting, the old days they pulled it out with horses.
Oh.
But when I started there, they had a person in that was a mechanic to have the garage. He revised some kind of a lumber truck out of an old World War I truck. It was able to roll those things on, you know, and the loads, and they'd haul them out with a lumber truck. Huh. And eventually they got the big carriers where they just clamp on and just away they
took
go.
Them out.
Yeah. But they would pull them out with horses then. And I didn't get in on the horse part. They just ended that about the time I got there. Mm-hmm. There's still a few horses.
So how many people were on the green chain at a time?
I think, if I remember right, there was about 36. And they had a what they call a lead man. He was kind of a supervisor, you know, and he'd show everyone what to do. And soon as he could get off of it, she got off of it. A lot of them stayed there for years.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So what was your next job after that?
Then I went back into the planer, and I was starting to learn the grade surface lumber. That's the grade you get, you know, 1, 2, 3, or 4, and so on. And I wanted to learn the grade lumber, so I was learning that. I wanted to learn something, you know, as long as I was there. And then a job came open. See, it was union, and you could bid on it. I got a little senior, and I could bid on jobs. And there was a job, what they call counting the lumber before it went into the boxcar. Mm-hmm. You counted it twice, see, so to make sure the customer didn't get gypped or we didn't get gypped. I count the first time, and another person counted the second time. And then they'd load it into the boxcar. And that's what I was doing until I went into the service. See, I went in the service just 4 years after that. Mm-hmm. Korean War broke out, and they grabbed me right away. Went to Korean War in 1950. And then when I got out of the Korean War, well, I went back to that old job, and then jobs were opening up, and I became assistant foreman out in the lumber yard where they were stacking lumber way up in the air because we were still air drying. We had lumber clear to Milltown, stacked up out there. It was something. I wish I had some pictures of that. I don't. So. Okay.
All right. So then you were assistant foreman, and so eventually you worked your way up to... Supervisor,
Then I became foreman of the lumber yard. I had 55 men. Women weren't working those days yet. They came later. They came in 1968. But I was And we'd stack the lumber up and let it air dry, and we had some equipment for it. A lot of that was hard work too, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then we started what they call, the lift trucks came in. We got some lift trucks in, so we started just stacking them in regular loads, but letting the air get to it by putting strips in between, and just stacking the lift truck down. That was really handy. Yeah.
They dried faster?
Yeah, it didn't kill everyone off, you know what I mean. The lift truck would stack it up and air dry it. And we'd mark it on the end when it was stacked so we know how long it'd been there in the air. And so in the summertime, you could sometimes get lumber dry about in 30 days.
That's pretty fast.
Summer like this summer, it's dry real good in 30 days.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So, sort of changing tack a little bit here, but what do you think is the biggest change that's happened to the Milltown, Bonner, West Riverside area in the time that you've known it? Which is
the biggest change?
Yeah.
Whew. Well, I think part of it is the modernization of the mill, and I think the biggest change to me was the way people started driving to work, and then the mill was. They modernized the mill in 1962, so everything was more or less push button, as we called it. But the biggest area changed, I think, was the Milltown houses, especially started getting water, started getting bathrooms, started getting modern.
Mm.
Yeah, because they had the old well, and we had a couple of them in Bonner too, the wells that were out in the community well where you just went out and filled up your bucket, took it back and heated up and washed your dishes, put in a big galvanized tub and took a bath. That was it. Yeah, they finally got running water in the houses, made the houses modern.
Did the company do that in
Milltown?
No,
the company did in Bonner, not Milltown. You owned your own home there.
And so when you were a kid, people in Milltown would have been really rare for them to have running water in their houses?
Even in Bonner was that way. Okay. I got pictures of Bonner. I don't know where they are now, but I showed it to somebody one day, and he said, "What's all these little houses in the back?" I said, "That was your bathroom." The toilets.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So along with that, has the appearance of the area changed a lot from what you remember it?
What?
The appearance of the area, the way it looks? Has that changed much since you were...
Well, yeah, they changed. Well, right now it's changed a lot, but they did take out some houses. I think I told Kim they had about... We went through on a bicycle and I showed them where the houses were and stuff at one time. They took out about 10 houses. They've taken out a lot more since then. But, but they actually hadn't changed too much except, you know... I remember we had the horse barns in back... too, and they converted those into garages, extra garages for your car. So that's where I put my first car.
Oh, those barns behind the houses on...
Yeah.
I just actually drove over there the other day, and I was trying to figure out why there were so many barns back there.
Yeah, there's some left, but I think they tore them all down. I went through my bicycle here not too long ago, last year I think it was, checking the town and seeing what it was like, and I said, yeah, it's changed.
Yeah.
But they kept it so clean. The manager insisted on clean. I was telling Kim that. I says, one time I left my, this is when I was living with my parents, I left my car out and they told me to be sure to get in the garage the next night. That's where it's supposed to be, not in the back alley.
Really?
Okay, manager. Bet.
Did that also go for mowing your lawn or like picking up stuff around?
Yeah, they got very particular. At first they didn't because we didn't have, I remember when I was, during the Depression, in the 30s, we just threw our cans and junk out in the back and they'd come around with a couple of horses and a wagon and pick it up every once in a while. We didn't even have garbage cans. I never will forget that. And then the garbage cans, we just threw the garbage out there. We had a pile. At least we piled it up a little. And then right in there, too, was you piled all your wood for your, because we heated with wood.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
You burned wood. Everybody burned wood.
You were saying before we started the interview, before we started, you were talking a little bit about remembering the Clark Mill when you were in second or third grade.
Yeah.
Could you talk about that just a little bit? Just what you remembered about it?
I remember it. they shut it down just about the time I could, you know, knew what it was and everything. And it was named after, I think, one of the high ups in Butte. I think he was a president or something. He was named as Clark. They named it after him. But Beans was so close to Bonner, and Bonner was owned by the Anaconda Company. Clark was owned by the Clark himself.
Yes.
And it was a smaller mill. I remember that. It was a smaller mill. I remember the logs would come down the river, and they'd push them up just like we did. But it didn't. And the lumber yard was out there where the, I remember that, where the truck stop is now. Mm-hmm. That's about all I remember of it.
And then it was torn down?
I never
down.
Was in it to watch it run.
Yeah, it was torn little. Down?
Pardon?
It was torn down?
Yeah, they eventually tore it down. Uh-huh. Anaconda took it over.
Yes.
Yeah.
So did you work at the mill through the transition from when the company sold it? From when the Anaconda Company sold the mill? Did you work through that transition?
Oh, yes. Bring that up. I did, yeah. I was 26 years at Anaconda, and then when Champion took over, I was there with them about 8 years. I left.
Was that different?
Very different. They fired me.
Well, they gave you 8 years.
But anyhow, I saw so much politics going on. I didn't want to get into this, but I saw a lot of things going on, and I opened my mouth one time when I shouldn't have. And, that's all you have to do.
Yeah.
Like the government. Only don't get a hearing much.
Yeah.
But yeah, and then when Champion took over, see, they were a big corporation. They had a lot of mills all through the country, and what happened, I got to stay with them. They asked me to come back and work with them, and I'll never forget that. When I came back, before I was getting 4 weeks vacation, same desk, same job, and they said, you get 1 week vacation, that's all you get because you're a new employee. But they changed that after a while. But they had all their people, a lot of their people they wanted to promote, North Carolina, Washington, and so on. They moved them to Bonner and so on and so on. So. Yeah, it was difficult because what few of us stayed from Anaconda, we were kind of like the outcast, you know, I mean. And we'd try to tell them different things, and some of them would listen to us, some of them wouldn't, until I got in trouble, and they'd find out that they were doing something they shouldn't be doing. But,
so were you there when they made the big plywood mill?
Yep, I was there when they built it.
Uh-huh.
And before that, we were all lumber. We never had plywood. And, of course, I was there. They started the plywood about in 72, I think, and they finished about 74, somewhere in there. And then they started getting the plywood, and they ran it round the clock.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And we still made lumber, though. Yeah. But not like we did.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Going back just a second to living, growing up in Bonner, did you go to use the company store for your groceries, or
yes.
Did you go into...
No, company store. They would deliver. They'd come in the morning and take your order, and then they'd deliver in the afternoon.
They'd come to your door and take your order? And
they'd come and sit down, and if it was Christmas time, my mother would give them a drink, and until my dad found out about it and told her not to do that anymore. they'd come, and they'd go back, and then and you could also go to the store and buy something. And they handled work gloves and whatever they could, you know.
Do you think that the community changed much when the company left? Like, did it change how people felt about living there? And did it feel different to you being in that area once it wasn't a company town really anymore? Or?
No, after Anaconda sold, Champion wanted to sell it, and they couldn't for some reason. They wanted to plot off all the land that the houses were on and sell the houses to anybody that wanted to buy them. And there was something, I don't know all the details, because there was something in there that they couldn't sell it, so they didn't want to fool with the town.
Uh-huh.
That's a headache, taking care of all those houses.
Yeah, well, I guess Simpsons.
So
yeah.
Did they take care of them, or are they...
Not too good.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
They didn't care. They were looking at the production and the money and the plywood, and that's all they were looking at.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, how much money they could make, yeah.
So you talked a little bit before the interview about what you used to do as a kid, swimming in the river. What other kinds of things did you do for fun when you were growing up there? What do you
well,
remember?
Well, the Bonner baseball team had a town team, and they would give us the old baseballs and the old crack bats, and we'd tape them up, and we all started playing baseball. And of course, some of the older ones that got into high school played a little for. I went to where Hellgate is.
Mm-hmm.
That was the oldest school, and they played football there, and they'd come back, and we'd teach us how to play football. And we never had at Bonner. We never had a gym or nothing, you know, for basketball and that. Towns, the schools in town, some of them had gyms, and they had a city league going for them. But no, we never, that never came into love, 21 or 22 years old. And we got this gym and so on, yeah.
And then in the summertime, so, you'd go, do you want to talk about that swimming hole just a bit?
The what?
The swimming hole that you had the picture of.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, we were there all summer. Yeah. And then we used to fish a lot.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, when we were kids, we'd go up in the river and fish and in the hills a lot.
And you were saying everybody had a bicycle? That's how you.
We finally got bicycles, yeah.
Yeah.
And we'd ride bikes into Missoula. That was a little later, which probably when I was a freshman, sophomore in high school. The war was on. There was no traffic, and the only highway was old 200, you know, that goes through the Blackfoot and the old roads, we call it now. No freeways in those days. And we'd ride into Missoula, and we'd go to Greeno Park, because Greeno Park is a lot bigger than it is now.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd ride around and go back home. That was a big time.
Sounds all right. Yeah. Did you ever?
We had a blast. Yeah. And then we were on a lot of war projects, too. You know, wartime, we collected paper, and I can't remember all the different things we did for the war effort, you know, because I was in the scouts and the Boy Scouts to do it. We'd get the girls to help us. Because the Girl Scouts. And yeah, we had a good time. And then eventually... Just a sec. I think I got a part of this was about, this was the first Bonner schoolhouse. You just see part of it.
Oh, there.
But what it went clear out here. But eventually, and this top part was all dance floor. The company, Anaconda Company, put it into a dance floor for the community to dance. And those kids took it over when we were teenagers.
Uh-huh. Really?
So we fixed it all, like cleaned it up, and kept it clean. And just the top floor. And we'd had... We dance up there. That's where I learned to dance. Get the girls and the boys, and I was 15 in that picture.
Yeah, so you were a skier. This is a photo of a young man with cross-country skis.
But they also use that Bonner Hall for community thing and Sunday school. They also had a Sunday school there every Sunday. Had a couple of teachers that were willing to go teach Sunday school. The kids that didn't belong to a church. We had a Lutheran church in Bonner, and we had a Catholic church. The Milltown kids came, and everybody, yeah, yeah. But that was the old Bonner school.
Huh.
They tore that down too, about in the late 40s, somewhere is there, because they put two houses in there. They had to move a couple houses, and so it was a good place to put them.
So, did you ever go down to the reservoir or the mill pond or around the dam there? Was that somewhere where you went as a kid?
To what?
Down around the dam and the reservoir and to the tunnel pond or any of those places?
I never went there too much.
Because maybe Bonner kids wouldn't have gone over that direction very often.
We knew where it was, but we didn't go there too much.
Yeah.
My mother wouldn't let me.
I think
there were 2 or 3 kids drowned in that, too, in that area when I was growing up.
Oh, really?
I know one dad was drowned right back of the mill because the mill had a dam, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they use that mostly for the logs. When they want to let some logs out, they'd... Yeah. But there was 2 that I knew had drowned. One was my class. Fell in, you know, and yeah. So.
Hmm. Did you have brothers and sisters?
Pardon?
Did you have brothers and sisters?
No, I had one brother. He was 14 years older. And he started college when I started the first grade. He went to the University of Montana. Way back in 32 or something like that. And he graduated from Missoula County High.
So he was gone by the time you were growing up?
Pretty much. He left when I was, I think, second grade. Because he went to school and then over to Spokane. He wanted to go to school over there.
Mm-hmm.
Business college, that was it he went to, yeah.
So you were talking a little bit about the dance hall and the churches and some of the community activities that went on. Did that change over the time you were living in the Bonner area? Are those things still as important as they were?
The thing was, the churches Not like the church I belong to. I mean, I went into the Lutheran church because, you know, I went with the Scandinavian kids because they were all my friends, and so the Catholic kids. But for some reason, they got me going to Sunday school and church. And so, but the churches then were more family-like, and I didn't, my dad didn't go because he was a Mason, my mother was a Catholic, and and so on. They had their own beliefs, but I see a lot of changes in that. It was all family, see. Mm-hmm. So this one family kind of took me in, and they had father and son banquets and stuff, and I'd go, one of the Lutheran, one of the Norwegians would take me. Yeah, so...
Were there a lot of different languages spoken
yes,
when you were growing up?
I was going to bring that up next, yes. And I got to know more Norwegian than I did Polish, I think.
Did you speak Polish?
I was learning. My mother was teaching me. Then, I don't know, she got disgusted with me. I can't remember. I think I just didn't want to learn or something. Uh-huh. But, yeah, I could speak some of it.
Uh-huh. So what other languages do you remember
hearing
around?
All her family and everything when they get together. My grandfather didn't really speak English. Yeah. Pardon?
What other languages do you remember hearing around as a kid?
The French. Okay. Yeah, we had the French speaking, a lot of Frenchmen in the area. And Finlanders, there's quite a few Finlanders. In fact, they called West Riverside one time Fintown, so full of Finlanders. But that's about the only ones I knew that if I can think of.
So are these activities that you talk about with the church and the community, does that still happen today, or has that changed over time?
Being that I was in the church for 60 years, yeah, that's different today. They go on swimming parties, and they go with vehicles, and they go on camp. See, we never did any of that. If we had to do anything, we had to do it ourselves. Uh-huh. But now it's all organized. Uh-huh. And I coached Little League baseball for years, you know, because I was a ball player, but... Like I said, when I was little, we just played by ourselves, you know. Mm-hmm. Picked up what we could. Mm-hmm. Now it's so organized.
Do you still go out there sometimes for events at the church? Or?
I belonged to the church till I moved here.
Okay.
Yeah, and then after I moved in town, I still go to St. Paul's once in a while. Uh-huh. But
you talked about how women started to work at the mill in 68.
Yes.
Was that a decision that was made by management, that women were going
government.
To be offered jobs, or
government?
Oh, is it an equal opportunity?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And
we had to start working women. We had to have a certain percentage of them, and so on and so on. You know.
How did that
it
work
went,
out?
It not a good at first because those old timers, the woman belongs in the kitchen.
did but
like
women...
what supervisor said. Well, boy, my old lady isn't going to come down here. I said, what if she does? She might get on to get a job, and she's in the union. She could come work in your department if she had the seniority. That shook him all up, because that's what I'm afraid of. Oh, yeah.
But women worked before that in the community. They worked as teachers and...
That's all.
That was all?
And house cleaning. Uh-huh. There was a few nurses. Yeah.
Did you have any women working in the office before 1968? Doing
mostly men.
Okay.
We had, I think, two women in the office when I was first became a supervisor. I remember that. And that was in the 50s. Yeah. But most of those men were holdovers, had been there for umpteen years.
Yeah.
And before too long, they were retiring. Some of them were dying or whatever.
But well, they adjusted
then,
them. Huh?
Then what? They had some women working there, and they learned a certain job, and then they'd hustle down to the Forest Service and get paid more money and better benefits, and they go to work there. You know, right where the government building is now, the Forest Service,
yeah.
Post Office. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there, they go work there. Yeah. Remember that.
So did your mother work at all at any point?
Took care of the house. Yeah. Dad made enough money, made good money, so she took care of the house. Mm-hmm. Took care of me.
That was good.
Yeah. Tried to.
Let's see. What about the coming of the interstate? Was that a big change in the community, or?
Not in ours so much. I know some towns it just killed it because the main road went right through the town. You know.
Yeah.
All the businesses were there, and the interstate goes way around and misses all that. But ours, I'm trying to think, it didn't hurt ours too much, because what it helped us on was the lumber trucks getting there faster and better service. And, you know, actually helped us more than anything. And the people started then building farther out.
Uh-huh. So those people.
When I remember being a supervisor then either. I had one family, one guy coming in from Stevensville to work, and I said, "You're crazy to drive that far to work." Wow. Now they all come from the Bitterroot and everywhere else to, you know. Then they started building out the Bitterroot. That's how what built the Bitterroot up, was when Champion took over the mill, because it was so much bigger with the plywood plant and all that, so many more people. A lot of those Californians saw all that nice land up there for little or nothing. Mm-hmm. They bought it and went to work at the mill. They drive. They're still driving. I know Walmart, where I work, of course, that's close to the Bitterroot, you know, the old one. Of course, a lot of them come in there from Stevensville and Florence, but they got land. They got it when it was cheap.
They want to have space.
Yeah, now it's a fortune.
So, do you know anyone who's still working out at the mill? Are you familiar with anyone who's going through the layoffs and the changes that are going on there right now? Or?
Uh-uh. We're talking about today. I was talking to, I had lunch with a couple of, still living, some of my friends. And one person was 81 and the other was 82. We were talking about the old days, some, and yeah, there's no one left.
Yeah.
Yeah. That I can think of, you know.
How do you think?
And the ones that, I think there's a couple, there's one that, but his mind, you know, their mind gets, Alzheimer's or whatever. Yeah. So.
How do you feel when you go out there and you see people having to move out of all those, the houses you grew up in? And
I just shook my head. I said, well, I guess you have to move with the change of time. See, this is a big problem in anywhere, is changes. Missoula, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. On your workforce, when we'd have a change at the mill, you know, we went from all this old-time working to modernization. Some of those old-timers about killed them. They couldn't wait to retire because they weren't used to that. Yeah. And I always said, as a supervisor, and you know, that the big thing is change.
Yeah, you were going to say something about the steel bridge and change.
Yeah, they want to tear it out. I'm not understanding what's all going on because I'm not up there anymore, but my son is. He really was.
He lives.
And I think they just want to keep it because it's a landmark.
So your son lives in Bonner now, or at Milton?
Yeah, he lives out that area. He built a home. Well, he built a home out there in the Tura area. Tour exit area, yeah. Built just across from where we used to live, you know, where he was raised. But,
How do you feel about the whole river cleanup? Is that a good thing for the community, or is that has it been disruptive?
Yes. I knew what went in here because we had the dump right down there where the freeway crosses in Milltown, and they're cleaning up in there. That was a dump. They just take stuff and dump it out there. Wash machines, anything, old cars, fill up the river. In those days, they didn't care about anything. I remember, and it wasn't too many years ago in Missoula, city council thought if we dump all the old car bodies along the river, it'll keep the high water from erosion, hitting the banks, you know. And here was Missoula with car bodies, back of the Wilma, all the way down, around, clear down where the Edgewater is, and on up. Yeah. No, anything years ago, you know, they just dumped in the river. Didn't know what to do with it. Or take it off the Bonner dump. And then what we do there, we get a bunch of scrap from the mill that would really burn quick, you know, and dump it on a lot of this stuff because there were dead deer there and dead dogs and everything else, and burn it. So, and then the smoke would be just tremendous in Bonner and in Milltown, depends which way the wind was going. Oh, it was awful. Okay, I'd throw that in.
Yeah, so the cleanup of the sediment that's going on right now.
Yeah, because much of that came from Butte and for years. And this now went in Bonner, anything. Well, look how they cleaned the Blackfoot up every once in a while themselves. They have to go up to Blackfoot and clean it up. People throw their beer bottles, everything else there. Yeah. Right. But the sediments, from Butte, yes, I say there's a lot of them in there.
Do you know any folks who think who wish the cleanup didn't have to happen, or that the powerhouse could stay in place, or think you know people who wish it didn't have to change, and that the powerhouse could stay there, and that the cleanup maybe?
Yeah.
What do you?
I don't hear much about.
Yeah.
About leaving the things the way they are, but I know those houses in Bonner. I was telling Kim about this. It's the last four that I remember being, that I didn't know, but I heard about being built, were 1916. And I said the one next to where I was raised, it was so old they finally tore it down, built a new one there, because one of the officials was coming over from Butte to live in it.
Oh. So that's was built in the 50s or the 40s?
Yeah, 40s.
40s,
and,
yeah.
And that was another thing. Anytime there was a promotion in the office, they came from Butte, see, because we were under the Anaconda copper mining and so on and so on.
Was there problems like labor strikes? And is that what you mean? And
yeah, we had labor strikes, but no. But I'm talking about the officials. Uh-huh. Like if we needed, say, a vice president, they would come from Butte over to Bonner instead of promoting one out of the ranks.
Oh, okay. I see.
You know
yes.
what I mean?
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. This is just a question about the houses. You mentioned they were heated with wood. Were they at some point hooked up to the steam from the plant so that they were heated with the...
Yeah, the steam was hooked up to that one row of houses they're tearing out.
So but just on that side of the street? On
yeah.
The mill side
yeah,
of the street?
Yeah, that's by the office there.
But not while you were living in those houses or...
Yeah, they were there.
Oh, they were.
He was on the other side.
Oh, you were on the other side.
Yeah, and they didn't have to pay for any utilities. See, that was all heat from the... Because they weren't going to burn wood. We won't get into that. But we burned wood. And eventually, of course, gas came in later on. Gas came on when I was living there before we built our house. It came about in 1960, I think, the gas come to Bonner. But I was burning wood in Bonner.
When did people get telephone service?
We had one of the first ones, I remember, and they had one at the hotel in the office. That was about in 1935, 1936.
So do you remember the hotel?
Real well.
And what was the hotel you used for?
The hotel was used for the officials when I come from Butte. They had all rooms fixed up for them, and they would use it. And then they had some bachelors living there, the single office people from the office. And they had a couple others in there, but it was mostly used for guests or anything. And that was about it. Mm-hmm. But they had a cook there, and so on and so on. You could go there and have a good lunch. It was a feast. If you wanted there, a lot of the mill workers went there to have lunch.
Anybody who was working for the mill could go there
yeah,
for lunch.
But yeah. Some of them frowned on the white linen and that. They didn't quite go for that. I laughed.
So was it a commercial hotel or was it a company hotel?
Company.
Okay. If you were just traveling through town, you probably wouldn't
stay. I remember
when
the official said, it goes down, it's an eyesore, tear it down, it's cost us money. Because, you know, that time Anaconda was trying to cut costs or something. I don't know. Corporation, that's the way they are sometimes. They get. And it was. It wasn't making them any money. It wasn't being used much anymore. There was about six people living in there, plus, as I say, the food. The people lived there. They got three good meals a day, too. They paid for it, though. They paid on flat rate so much a month. And that was it. Came out of their paycheck and so on. Yeah.
Do you remember were there gardens behind them or in them on the mill site?
Yeah, we had one there. It was right behind our house. It was right off of the highway. It wasn't far from the highway. Yeah. Our house sat here and then the garden started. Well, at first, I shouldn't say that. First, we had a football field. The general manager's son wanted a football field, so they cut the gardens out there and we put a football field in and a big fence around it. And then the gardens went. And they went down more towards the horse barn because they didn't have as many horses, so it was good fertile ground.
So you had a little plot there.
Yeah, we had there. They plotted it off, and they staked it, and they put your number on a stake, and then you drew a number, and that's the one you took, and you had to take care of it. Mm-hmm. If you didn't take care of it and clean it up in the fall, you couldn't get another one next year. But man, some of the most beautiful potatoes and carrots and stuff they grow in that garden because the soil was so wonderful.
Hmm. Yeah. Because of the horse barn.
Yeah, for the horse. And they didn't fertilize it too. Yeah, they didn't know what to do with the horse manure. They'd bring it up there in the fall and dump it on the gardens. Yeah, it was right behind our house. I remember that.
Was that when you were a child then? Would you help in the garden?
It went up until during the war. Then they turned it into a log yard.
But, so everything gets turned into a log yard eventually, sounds like.
Pardon?
Everything out there gets turned into a log yard eventually.
Yeah. Well, then we got this big Wagner in 1960. That would take a whole carload of logs off
and
dump them in the pond rather than take the old jammer and take one and two off or roll them off yourself. And so they turned that into a log yard. And that's just an extension now where they're going with the log yard.
Yes.
That's all they're doing.
Was it a safe environment, or were there a lot of accidents?
A lot of accidents. Mm-hmm. There was no OSHA in those days. I was there when OSHA came in, and boy, they even straightened up a lot of things. Yeah. And we used to say, they would fix something. You'd go tell management that this is dangerous, you should fix it. And after somebody got killed or hurt, then they'd fix it. And that's the truth. Mm-hmm. I mean, don't quote me on that, but that's the way it was. In those days, it just... I remember this one, he was a good friend of mine, got killed, and they had this one place that was real dangerous, and they kept saying it should be fixed and boarded up, and so somebody isn't going to get hurt. And well, he got killed there, then they boarded it up. And there was others that got hurt pretty bad, too. Yeah. A lot of open saws and things that, dangerous, you know.
Did your son go and work for the mill, or does your son?
Yeah, they all did.
Oh, okay. How many kids did you have?
Three boys.
And they all worked at the mill?
Well, the one had a bad heart, so they made him a watchman. And the other two, they worked in the mill, and my son says, I think I'll go to university. He tried everything else. He said, I think I'll try university. Got his degree, and the oldest son got on with, later on, got a good job with. But they knocked around quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And he got on with the Dell Corporation, makes computers and all that, yeah.
Okay, so they started out working at the mill for a while.
Oh, yeah, they all started there, yeah.
Is that how it was? Like, if you had a family that was mill family, then you just kind of...
Yeah, you could get them a job.
They were third generation, I guess, by
then.
Yeah,
oh yeah, yeah. My dad kept wanting me to go to university. I had the GI Bill coming and all this and that. And I said, Dad, this... And then after I became a supervisor, I was making more than some of the coaches were at the university and some of the professors, because it was so poorly paid at the university in those days. Yeah. But
so what do you think that area, Bonner, Milltown, Riverside, will be like in 50 years? Do you think it'll be changed or just sort of the same?
Well, I don't think there'll be a mill because there won't be any timber. They're running out of it now. I knew they would. See, when Champion bought, they got all that timber from Anaconda. Anaconda Select Logs, logging, what they did. They would cut so many trees a year, so we plan on having some for next year. And they had when Champion bought them, they had a surplus of 36 years ahead of timber. Well, when Champion took over, they had the plywood plant, and that takes all the big logs and just peels them. They ran 3 hours a day, or three shifts a day, 6 and 7 days a week, just because it was money. And as soon as the logs were cleaned up, and they said they'd do this, they sold. They knew there was no timber left, so they got out. Yeah. They sold Stimson then.
Hmm.
Yeah. And Stimson had an agreement with Plum Creek, who had some timber, which they got from Anaconda years ago.
For what, 10 years, was it?
Yeah, that they something had like that, yeah.
Yeah. But that's run out now.
It's running out. There's nothing. And the fires didn't help this year either.
No. But if the mill closes, then what do you envision will happen to the
land? There's so many rumors going. One said Denny Washington was going to buy it and put it all into housing development and all this. You hear so many things, that. And I think it eventually would be a housing development, but I said they're going to have to get rid of a lot of that dirt first because it's full of sawdust and ashes, and it's just, they'll settle. The houses settle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Hmm.
But who knows?
Well, I think that's about it.
Yeah. Do you have any special stories that you remember about growing up there that would be fun to include? Things you did or wished you'd done or...
I know we had a good time. Yeah. I remember that. Us kids, it was so interesting because we had to figure everything out ourselves, which was good. You know, we, like I said, we didn't have all the organization. The scouts was all right. The scouts, you know, we were in the scouts. We had this troop of scouts of honor, but no uniforms. Just we were lucky to get in the scouts about.
Did you go on?
I'm just trying to think of some different things. There was some class distinction between Bonner and Milltown, and I know this and that. And of course, we're all best of friends, you know, later on. But, and that's why I said to go to Milltown, because my mother wouldn't let me. Until I got older, and like a teenager, I'd sneak down there sometimes on my bike. And yeah, we all became friends, and especially when we got to high school.
Was there a bus that came to get you for high school, or did you?
Yeah, we had a bus at high school. Uh-huh. Yeah. Uh-huh. And Missoula didn't have it. You know, they'd walk from all over town to go to high school. Like right out here. Uh-huh. There was a lot of kids from here went to high school. They'd walk. Yeah. And eventually, I was on the school board when we got the first bus to haul the kids to Bonner School. You know, that's a long haul from West Riverside. It was 3 miles almost, I think. 2.5. So we started hauling the kids in. No, I can't think of anything right offhand.
Okay.
About.
Okay. Well, thank you for your time.
Yes, thank you.
You're welcome.